Welcome to the Teach the Geek podcast, where engineer and author Neil Thompson talks with STEM professionals about public speaking, a struggle for many of us. Whether you're a novice public speaker or a proficient one, you can always pick up tips on how to improve. Here's your host, Neil Thompson.
Welcome to another edition of Teach the Geek interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I'm the founder of Teach the Geek. I work with technical professionals so they can present more effectively, especially in front of non-technical audiences. And you can learn more about that at teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. If you're watching this on YouTube, a comment would be great. And if you're listening to the podcast, a review would be great. Today, my guest is Ben Cromie. He's an optical engineer. He once had acting aspirations, but ultimately chose a different path. So I'm really interested to learn what went into making that decision and the work he does now, and if acting is ever something that is far from his future. So we'll see what happens. So welcome to Teach the Geek interviews, Ben.
Yeah, thanks, Neil. Thanks for hosting me. I'm glad to chat with you today.
Great. So from the bit of research I did on you, I saw that you studied optics. So what is optics, and what made you become interested in it?
So optics really is a branch of physics that deals with light and how light interacts with matter and the universe. So optics, in optical engineering, you learn optical physics is all about how light interacts with materials and with surfaces and all those fundamental physics-y kind of things. Optical engineering is using that knowledge to create devices like the camera we're using to have this interview on, or the internet that's carrying all of that information back and forth between our computers.
Oh, okay. That's pretty cool. And what made you even think to do that, though?
So my dad is a microscopist, and he works more in the biological space of studying cellular biology and understanding those biological interactions. And as a kid, I would see those microscopes in his lab, and that kind of gave me a general introduction to optics. As a high school student, I saw a presentation by a group of ambassadors from the University of Arizona College of Optical Sciences. And at that point, I knew that LASER was an acronym. I kind of knew a little bit about how polarized sunglasses work. So they hunted me down with a flyer afterwards and said, "You're coming to our summer camp this summer." So I went to that summer camp and I was hooked.
Okay. So you didn't just stop with a degree, an undergraduate degree. You went all the way through to a PhD. So what made you decide to do graduate studies?
So I had my freshman year, I did this research experience program for undergraduates where they had people talk about different career paths that you can take. And they made a compelling case for why a PhD is advantageous, mostly because with a PhD, you have the opportunity to look at unanswered questions a little bit more. You have the chance to pursue the edges of science and knowledge, and you run into the problem all the time of like, wow, I don't know how to do this, but I looked online and nobody knows how to do this. And the first time you encounter that as a PhD student, it's a bit intimidating. But as you start to have that experience more and more, you realize, you know, there's a lot of people out there doing stuff that's not been done, and everyone just kind of has to figure it out. And that's really fun.
All right. So now you've got your undergraduate degree, you have a master's degree, you get a PhD, it's all in optics. So then when you finish, what kind of work do you do with that kind of background?
There's a lot of different kind of work you can do. I have friends who work at Apple working on the displays in MacBooks or the camera modules or even their Vision Pro AR VR thing that they've got now. That's augmented reality or virtual reality. That's what AR VR stands for. I have friends who work in making lasers to power the internet or to fry things. Personally, I work in the astronomical telescope space, making big space telescopes. My company, Ball Aerospace, made the big mirrors on the James Webb Space Telescope or all of the science instruments that are on Hubble right now. So that's what I do personally.
All right. Whenever I have people that get PhDs on the podcast, I'm always interested to learn whether going into industry was always their goal or if they ever thought to stay in academia. What was the decision like for you?
That is the classic question with getting a PhD. I went into my PhD torn because I really do like teaching. I helped teach a class on engineering for my whole PhD, and I really enjoyed it. I do miss getting to do the teaching part of it, but for me, the main reason to go into industry was a better work-life balance and still a chance to do pretty interesting research and projects that did not require me to be constantly fighting for grant funding.
Yeah, that's often what I hear about people that stay in academia. Plus the dearth of jobs in academia in the first place, especially if you want a tenure track position.
So that's true.
That often may be people's. Sometimes that the fact that the fact that that is the case kind of makes the decision for some people.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. 100%. All right. So. All right, so now you're working at a company, you're doing work that you find interesting. You know, when I first started this podcast, it was all about public speaking and just speaking in front of people and the struggles that people that with technical backgrounds sometimes have. It actually started with myself having to give presentations in front of management and not being all that great at it, but getting better at it over time because I saw the benefit. Uh-huh. When did you realize that speaking in front of others could be of use to you?
So my first real technical presentation was at the end of that same research experience program that I did after my freshman year. For me, I really realized that as a scientist, your work is really only as useful so far as people know about it. If you do a bunch of research in a vacuum, and even if you write a paper, if it's just sitting there in a PDF somewhere, that doesn't mean it's really going to have a meaningful impact. Getting out there and talking about it is both good for you and your exposure and growth as a professional, but also just spreading the word about the good science that you do. If you're a scientist, you're doing this work because it's stuff that's exciting to you and it's an impact that you want to have happen. I know very few people that just do science just because it gives them a paycheck. A lot of people really are passionate about what they're doing and they want their work to have an impact. And getting out there and speaking about it is one of the best ways to make sure that your work has an impact.
Indeed. Well, when I first started giving presentations, they were terrible, but I got better. I got better at it over time.
Right.
Is speaking in front of people something you've always been good at? And if not, what'd you do to get better at it?
So you mentioned at the beginning that I was thinking about being an actor originally. So I do enjoy being in front of people. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're good at giving a technical presentation. So it helps to have, I had some very good coaches there. One of the people I worked for, Dr. Pierre Blanche, was very critical of presenters, and he really smacked me around a lot in my early presentations to help my slides be better and help my presentation style be more clear. There's also this guy, Jean-Luc Dumont, who talks a lot in the optics community, who talks about how to give more effective presentations, mostly from a slide standpoint. But he also talks about how to not have a really aggressive body language. Originally, when I was presenting, I kind of like swayed back and forth. I moved across the stage a lot. So thinking about how your body language communicates, thinking about how where you're looking helps direct the audience's attention. Those kind of things were really transformative for me when I was learning how to be a better presenter.
Yeah, when it comes to those technical presentations, they can be rather difficult, especially if you're giving them in front of non-technical people. Because
right. I mean,
if you're talking to other technical people, especially ones within your field, there's possibly some things you can get away with. But
right.
If you want to use that technical jargon with non-technical people, good luck.
Right.
Hopefully they stay away.
Right.
Yeah, it could be an issue. So when it comes to the presentations that you do, do you have a process for putting them together? And if so, what is it?
So the first thing for me that's really helpful to think about in a presentation is what are you trying to get people to get out of it? You have to think about, you're not just telling the story of the work that you did, because yes, that is your goal to some degree, is to lay out all of the work that you did and give your conclusions at the end. But you have to think about What are the main points of impact you want to get across? Especially if you're giving a longer presentation, and to your point, if you're giving it to people who are outside of your specific niche area, which as someone with a PhD, that's pretty much always the case. You pretty much always have at least some people in the audience that aren't part of your specific subdiscipline. So I think it really, especially technical people have a tendency to want to pack as much information into one slide as possible. The number of times you go to a conference and you see like five or six graphs on the same presentation pop up, and then you're trying to pay attention to what the speaker's saying, but there's all this information up there. You can barely follow everything. So thinking about in each slide, like, what is your main point? What are you trying to get across with this specific slide? And only have information that is going to support that in your slide. For me, a lot of my presentation, I in particular like to start with the slides. A lot of people like to kind of write out their script and do their slides with it. But personally, I find if I make very effective, concise, clear set of things that I'm presenting to, having a presentation that is similarly concise and clear follows naturally from that.
Yeah, concise and clear. Who doesn't like that, right?
Right.
Yeah, I firmly agree with you with on your point on going to these technical conferences and I've seen a bunch of graphs on the slide, and you're thinking, which one am I supposed to be looking at again?
Right.
You know, the presenter, he or she knows what graph they're looking at, and hopefully they got a pointer. One of those laser pointers point to the particular graph, but oftentimes they don't. And a lot of times these graphs, because you want to get as many of them on the page as possible, they're kind of small. So you can't even read the X and Y axes as to what those graphs even are.
Right.
Like, or, you know, then it's just like, I don't know what the hell's going on. I'm thinking about where I'm going for lunch.
Right. Well, sometimes even when they have that laser pointer, they're just spinning it around on the presentation the whole time, and everyone, half the audience is like a cat just going,
right? Because oftentimes, especially if you're nervous, your hand might be shaking, so you don't even know what graph they're pointing at, because as you're right, that pointer is kind of spinning around. Yeah, it's just a comedy of errors for sure. So,
right.
So also when it comes to presentations, do you ever get nervous before giving a presentation? And if so, how do you calm your nerves?
So it depends on the caliber of presentation. If it's just an ordinary presentation, like to my team, at this point, I don't really get very nervous anymore just because I've done so many of those. At a big conference or at a big review meeting in front of our customers, then yeah, I do get nervous. The way that I deal with it, especially when you see some people look out into the audience and see a full room and they see the size of the crowd and that makes them more nervous. I try to think of it the opposite way of thinking that this is a really full room, which means that people here are interested in what I have to say. And that helps to not see the audience as adversarial, like they're trying to judge me, but it makes me realize that I'm providing something to them that they're interested in. They want to hear what I have to say. Even if there are people in the room who don't care, they're only there because they're in between sessions and they just didn't want to get up. Having that mindset of they want to hear what I have to say really helps me.
Yeah, I've been guilty of that, being that person who was too lazy to get up.
Right.
Yeah, I've definitely been there. I've also been in the audience. This is always so interesting when you have two competing labs in the audience. So then you have one person from the lab that gets up to give the presentation, and then you in the Q&A part, you'll have the people from the competing lab peppering them with these questions to try to discredit them. It's hilarious.
It is hilarious, yes.
Like, you don't need to take this outside, you know what I mean? It's like, throw
right.
Hands, do something. Something needs to happen.
Yeah, definitely the nerd equivalent of throwing hands, for sure.
For sure. You know, I mentioned in the intro, and you also mentioned, you touched on the fact that you acted. So I'm really curious to see or to learn where the interest in acting come from.
It just always was something I was interested in. It just seemed like a lot of fun. I've always been pretty good at doing like imitating voices and stuff. of like Kermit the Frog or you know the classic voices that people do. So I just thought it would be a lot of fun. I like being in front of people. I've done voice acting for over 10 years with this Star Trek podcast. I did a bunch of movies as a teenager with my friends. But the main reason I decided to go with science instead of with acting is it just seemed like a more predictable success path to be a technical person. Engineering generally is a fairly stable place to be, whereas even some of the most famous people in acting, like, you know, Chris Pratt, for example, lived in a van for many years before he had his big break. And then, you know, now he's this hugely successful person. But there's a lot of people who have these big dreams of going into acting and then never really make it, either because they don't have the right connections or just, I don't know, the casting director didn't like their face or something. But this just seemed like a more predictable path that I would have more control over than the whims of a casting director.
Yeah, that is definitely the case. In fact, I've had a couple, well, at least one that I can think of. It was very early on in the podcast, a guy that was that is an actor, but his background is in math. He got his first degree, undergraduate degrees in math. So he says that a lot of the actors, you know, the ones that you don't know, the people under Chris Pratt, they were have regular jobs and they do their acting, you know, in the weekends or on the in the evenings, and they take jobs that are flexible enough that they can go on auditions. So he used to work as a math tutor, and then he did that. And then during the, you know, because it was a flexible job, then he would do his auditions, you know, during those downtimes. So, you know, I guess it's just however you're able to work it. Yeah. So when it comes to presenting, for the people who are watching this podcast or listening to it, what would your number one tip be to become more effective giving presentations?
I think for me, you should really spend some time watching other people present. If you've never been to a conference, figure out how to get to a conference. Take some observations. It's very, very helpful to think about yourself both in the audience and then watching the presenter and thinking, okay, what about this speaker did they use that lost me mid-presentation? What about this engaged me? What about the organization of the presentation was easy or difficult to follow? It's like any other skill. Learning, watching someone who's good at it and bad at it is really helpful to seeing the kind of things that you find useful or engaging. When I'm giving a presentation or when I'm preparing a presentation, I think about myself in the audience too, not just how it is for me as a presenter. How would someone who's never seen your content before, which it's very difficult when you've worked on something for a year, to think about the assumptions that you're making and how hard it is for someone outside of your work to follow it. It's very helpful to find someone at your institution or a friend and give a presentation to them and ask them to be mean to you and say, like, tell you all of the things that you did poorly or that, like, oh, you said this point, but I didn't really follow it. All those kind of things from someone you know and trust is very, very helpful.
I think you're absolutely right when it comes to getting better at giving presentations. Find somebody that you trust and ask them to tear it apart. If you're at least if you're strong enough to take that type of constructive criticism. I mean, some people are rather sensitive. But if you actually do want to get better, that I think that's an excellent way to go. So yeah, that'd be great. You know, whenever I think about giving presentations, especially for people like you, people with PhDs, you've reached the pinnacle of your educational topic. I mean, there's nothing higher than the PhD. So you're very skilled. You're very knowledgeable on a particular subject. And it's and I suspect that it could be rather difficult to communicate that to other people, but it's really helpful to just have that empathy, knowing that you weren't always the expert. You weren't always in optics. You didn't always have a PhD. You didn't always have a master's. You didn't always have a bachelor's. You used to be a non-optics person. So, hearkening back to that time when you were not in that field, what kind of presentation would you have wanted to listen to or been willing to listen to? And I think when you answer that question, it's a lot easier to put your presentations together.
Right.
Yeah, 100%. Well, this has been great. I mean, I really enjoyed this conversation, Ben. Thank you so much for being a guest. How can people get in touch with you?
So you can find me on LinkedIn as my main online presence. There's very few Chromies in the world, so I'm not too difficult to find on there. Yeah, if people are interested in chatting more about optics things or about public speaking, I'd be happy to chat.
Excellent. Well, everyone, that marks the end of another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I'm the founder of Teach the Geek. I work with technical professionals so they can present more effectively, especially in front of non-technical audiences. And if you want to learn more about that, you can go to teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. Until next time, take care and stay safe. Thanks, Ben.
Yeah, thanks. Have a good one.
Well, everyone, that marks another episode in the can. I hope you enjoyed it. If you like these episodes and want to support Teach the Geek, please subscribe, share, and like on any of your favorite podcast platforms, or on all of them. Also, if you prefer to watch the episodes, head on over to the YouTube channel at youtube.teachthegeek.com. Until next time.